chapter 10, verses 32 to 34, and then Luke 9, verse 51. Now they were on the road going up to Jerusalem, and Jesus was going before them, and they were amazed. And as they followed, they were afraid. Then he took the 12 aside again and began to tell them the things that would happen to him. Behold, we are going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be betrayed to the chief priests and to the scribes, and they will condemn him to death and deliver him to the Gentiles. And they will mock him and scourge him and spit on him and kill him. And the third day he will rise again. Now it came to pass, when the time had come for him to be received up, that he steadfastly set his face to go towards Jerusalem.
Thanks, Judy. In the news recently, in fact, about 2 weeks ago, was a lady called Leanne Maiden. Now, Leanne Maiden decided to row across the Atlantic Ocean from Canary Islands to Antigua. She's a 42-year-old mother of two from Scotland, or the mother of Scotland, anyway, not sure how many children, but she made rowing history, making a solo row across the Atlantic. She took 66 days and 5 hours, and did it alone to raise money for charity. She arrived in Antigua on the 17th of February. Now, I'm not sure whether I'd call her foolhardy or brave, really, but perhaps a bit of both. And the thing was, she had a partner who was going with her, but the partner pulled out. So did she give up? No. She decided to continue that row across the Atlantic on her own. And she had that boat, well kitted out, no doubt, but nonetheless, she faced 20-foot high waves, all sorts of weather conditions, hot and cold, and of course, the isolation. Imagine being in the middle of the ocean. I couldn't stick that myself, not seeing anything but water for 2 months. I don't like boats anyway, but imagine being stuck in the middle of the ocean on your own. She had to row 14 hours a day and try and get some sleep when she could. So anyway, she did. She made it. So Leanne, she set her face on completing that amazing journey, and she succeeded. She set her face to it. She was determined, and she made it. Wonderful, wonderful achievement, wasn't it? However much we may think it's a bit foolhardy, but nonetheless, she actually made it to the Canary, to the Antigua. 3,000 miles she rowed on her own. In those readings, read about Jesus making the journey to Jerusalem. When the time had come for him to be received up, he steadfastly set his face to go to Jerusalem. He was walking with the disciples, the group of them, and he went ahead of them. Now, he'd warned them a number of times what would happen, so they couldn't understand. He was going before them, we read. They were amazed, and as they followed, they were afraid. They couldn't understand. Why was he going ahead? He knew what was going to happen to him. He knew the threats from the religious leaders. They wanted to kill him, and yet here he was, going ahead of them, taking the lead as they walked to Jerusalem. Why? He set his face to go to Jerusalem, knowing what would happen to him. Knew where he was going. The disciples were scared. Why go there? Why go where you know you're going to end up being killed? We would we? But that was Jesus. He went ahead, took the lead of that group of disciples. Now, he'd made that decision, really, 3 years earlier in the Judean wilderness, in that barren isolated place where 40 days he spent wrestling with temptation. He made the decision then, 3 years earlier, the way he was going to go. Tempted by the devil, take an easier way. We all know the story, don't we? Turn those stones into bread. All these hungry people will follow you. They'll be thrilled. They'll be your disciples. Just turn the stones into bread. Jump off the temple. God won't let you be hurt. Wonderful feat. The crowds will flock to you. No need to go and die on the cross. Just do something spectacular, and they'll all follow you. Worship me. I'll give you all the kingdoms of the world. So the devil tried to sidetrack Jesus from going to the cross and take an easy way, to be popular. But no, he decided there and then the way he was going to go. He knew what was going to happen to him. He'd warned the disciples. In Mark 9 we read, he said to them, "The Son of Man is going to be delivered into the hands of men. They will kill him, and after 3 days he will rise." But they didn't understand it, what he meant, and they were afraid to ask him about it. So, yes, he told them. They didn't understand it. They were afraid to ask him what it meant. And so they continued to be afraid and mystified about it all. As Jesus came in, as Jerusalem came into view, there's a picture there of what it was like in Jesus' day. As the city came into view, Jesus didn't slacken his pace. He knew that's where his destiny lay. That's why he came from heaven to earth. That was the purpose of his coming. So he knew his destiny was there in Jerusalem to face trial. All the way through his ministry, of course, the Jewish leaders were trying to find a way to get rid of him. They threatened their way of life. They wouldn't believe he was the Messiah. He was an imposter, they thought, and so they wanted to get rid of him. We read in Matthew 26, "Then the chief priests and the elders of the people assembled in the palace of the high priest, whose name was Caiaphas, and they schemed to arrest Jesus and secretly kill him." Sorry, to arrest him and secretly kill him. Sorry, arrest him secretly and kill him. Let's get it right. But they said not during the festival. Passover was coming. Crowds of people would be there. They knew how popular he was with the crowds. They knew if they tried to arrest him, there'd be a riot. So they had to find a way, an inconspicuous way, to arrest him. How could they do it? How could they find a way to arrest him when he was so popular? And he wasn't trying to hide either, was he? Well, you could say they were in luck, because Judas, one of the disciples, turned into a traitor. They couldn't have believed this would happen, could they? One of his own disciples would actually come to them and say, "Do you want me to betray him?" They didn't seek him out. He sought them out. We read in Luke 22, Judas went to the chief priests and the officers of the temple guard and discussed with them how he might betray Jesus. They were delighted and agreed to give him money. He consented and watched for an opportunity to hand Jesus over to them when no crowd was present. So Judas went to them. Judas turned traitor and planned to betray his Lord. Maybe mystified by that, to think someone could spend 3 years with Jesus, watching his miracles and hearing his teaching, and then at the end of the day to actually betray him. Difficult to understand, isn't it? But that's the way it went. Then came the Last Supper. We read in Mark 14, "While they were reclining at the table eating, he said, 'Truly, I tell you, one of you will betray me, one who was eating with me.' They were saddened, and one by one they said to him, 'Surely you don't mean me.' Then we read in John that Judas went out and it was night. How appropriate, wasn't it? He went out into the night, and Judas had chosen the way of darkness. The way of darkness. He chose to betray the light of the world. Judas chose darkness. Now, Judas had a choice. We know it was prophesied, but nonetheless, Judas chose to do it. He chose to betray Jesus and to betray his master. We don't know really why. Was it greedy? Did he hope to force Jesus' hand? We don't really know. But nonetheless, he betrayed his Lord. He chose to do that, to turn against his Lord. Then Jesus went out into the Garden of Gethsemane. We went there once when we went to Israel. Still there, some of the olive trees are thought to be 2,000 years old in the Garden of Gethsemane. And there in the garden, Jesus wrestled. His human side shrank from what awaited him. And he prayed, "Abba, Father, if everything is possible to you, take this cup from me, yet not what I will, but what you will." And again, he made his choice. He made his choice to continue to the bitter end. He made his choice. Then came that mockery of a trial, held before, first of all, the Jewish leaders, and then before the Roman governor, Pilate, and accused of all kinds of things. And at the end of the day, Pilate said, "Not guilty." You can find no fault with him. And yet, despite that, Pilate was weak, wasn't he? He was afraid of the crowd who'd been whipped up by the Jewish leaders to shout, "Crucify him." And so Pilate gave in. He was a coward at the end of the day. And so Jesus was taken out to Calvary and crucified with two thieves. We know the end of the story, of course, don't we? When Easter Sunday comes, we celebrate that. But we know the disciples didn't know the end of the story. The Jewish leaders didn't know. They thought they'd won. The Roman soldiers didn't know the end of the story. They thought they'd won. It was the end of Jesus, they thought. That's a good riddance to a troublemaker. We know the end of the story. We celebrate that at Easter, won't we? The end of the story. It ended well. But at the time, it was a terrible time for Jesus. His disciples were absolutely devastated by it. All their hopes, it seemed, had been dashed. Why did it end like this? He shouldn't have gone there. He should have listened to us. Shouldn't have gone there. Now, Jesus did say this about those who want to follow him, didn't he? In Luke 23. "Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves, take up their cross daily, and follow me. Whoever wants to save their life will lose it. Whoever loses their life for me will save it." What good is it for someone to gain the whole world and yet lose or forfeit their very self? So what's our aim in life? Remembering what Jesus did for us, will we choose to be his disciple, to follow him, whatever the cost may be? In the book of Acts, the first Christians were only called Christians twice as a nickname. What they were usually called was followers of the way. Followers of the way. Not followers of a way, of the way. Jesus is the only way. They were followers of the way, the only way to forgiveness, the only way to hope, the only way to eternal life. The way. So have you begun that journey? It needs perseverance, of course, doesn't it? We read in Hebrews 12, 1-2, "Let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame." Yes, Jesus persevered to the very end. Interesting, it says the joy set before him. He was happy to go to the cross for us, happy to suffer for us. Now, today, millions of people do suffer for their faith, don't we, in many parts of the world. Christians in Muslim countries, many other parts of the world, they suffer for their faith. They're persecuted every day. Many are in prison. But they're persevering. We don't face that, do we? Not yet, anyway. But we still have to persevere under difficulties we face. Let's never forget what it cost Jesus to win that salvation for us. What our final reward will be, too. A final reward will come. Can we say the words of John Newton? Through many dangers, toils, and snares, I have already come. 'Tis grace has brought me safe thus far, and grace will lead me home. May that be our testimony. Can we set our face to follow him to the very end? Amen.